to Forecast News with Millie and Afshin, where we look ahead to the events going on around the world in the upcoming week. And it will be our last one before Christmas, but it's looking like it's going to be a big one. Afshin, let's go straight ahead and start with a Monday.
Last one. What did you say? Last one before Christmas. Yeah.
Last one.
Obviously.
Christmas. Yeah.
So it's a really good episode, this one.
Yeah.
Quite sad.
Monday the 11th of December we're starting with. And the start of the week actually focuses quite heavily on the forgotten war. And of course, that's the war in Ukraine. And on Monday, the UN Security Council will be discussing Ukraine. And this was actually requested by Russia, who wants to discuss arms supplies to Ukraine by NATO members and their allies. And Russia actually plans to invite a very interesting person to the session. I don't think they've announced who. Is that going to be you, Afshin?
What's that? It's probably going to be you, isn't it? I wonder who it'll be. Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe one of those senators whose children were apparently threatened by Lloyd Austin last week for... they were told if you don't finance the Ukraine war, the children of senators will be forced to the front as part of a U.S. deployment against Russia through Ukraine. What?
What, they're going to be invited by Russia?
No, I suppose they won't
be. Shackles.
But clearly there's a lot of upset on the Hill in Washington about the financing of the war. But then again, maybe some people are saying they are going to allow the money to be poured into Zelensky's bank account after all of this. But at the same time, I noticed the Japanese Financial Times saying, no, most Americans are really thinking that Biden is spending way too much money on a country that used to host Hunter Biden's Burisma deals.
Actually, because that will bring us on to Tuesday. But speaking of Monday.
That was a quick Monday. More was happening on Monday.
Huh?
Are you moving on to Tuesday?
No.
All right.
Okay. Also on Monday, as part of this, the IMF is actually releasing a statement on the second review of Ukraine's extended fund facility arrangement and the country's Article 4 consultation. Now, what that is in March, the IMF approved a four-year fund facility for Ukraine with funding of $15.6 billion. They've received two lots already amounting to about $3.6 billion, something like that. And now, obviously, there's a question surrounding Ukraine using the IMF, as there's the issue of repayment. And as we know, so many countries are crippled because of IMF payments. And I think Ukraine's interest rate is expected to be about 3.5% off the back of this. But really, this money is change compared to what the US is sending along with several other NATO members and their allies. So it's interesting. What do you make of the IMF sending Ukraine this money to fund the war?
Doesn't Russia help fund the IMF? I don't even understand why the IMF has this ability to just dole out this money. And it just goes straight into Zelensky's bank account because it can't go into any Ukraine sovereign wealth fund of any kind.
Well, I guess that's the thing with the IMF is there's questions on how it's distributed and it's... You know, questions on whether it's being distributed to the places that it says it's being distributed for, of course.
So the British taxpayer, the American taxpayer, the EU taxpayer suffers because of the public money that's poured into Ukraine directly. And then the IMF gives the top-ups to, I think the Ukrainian government denied that Zelensky's wife was out buying Hermes bags and Cartier jewellery, wasn't there? There was a big denial. Russian propaganda, clearly.
That's right.
But, the idea that the IMF is doing this whilst the UN Security Council will be debating why on earth this war still has to continue. My understanding is that the Putin administration in Moscow has said they're open to negotiations. Okay. Silence, complete silence on the NATO side, even though we now know that behind the scenes they recognize that Russia has beaten off this NATO war using this proxy of Ukraine. Borrell on Monday is going to be speaking as well, isn't he? The man, the EU foreign minister, who claimed that Europe was a garden compared to the jungle that was the rest of the world. And he'll be hosting Dmytro Kuleba in Brussels. Perhaps he's going to give a bit of the IMF cash directly to that foreign minister. All these Ukrainian personnel must be fearing for their lives now, because previously when the United States has given money to proxy leaders who fail in their mission to neutralize their Washington's adversaries. They're usually killed, done on fraud, imprisoned. I mean, look at Noriega of Panama.
Why do you think we haven't heard much of Ukraine? Obviously, since the war on Gaza has started, mainstream media has ignored Ukraine when it's been such a stark supporter of it for the last couple of years. Why haven't we heard anything?
And also, how is it from Gaza? We have these terrible images on drip feed on social media, let alone on some of the better international television stations. Compare that to the number of pictures we ever received from the Mariupol, from the alleged Russian atrocities that occurred. There's a complete mismatch here. And I think that shows that NATO nations were controlling media access to Ukraine and what was actually going on in the front. This counterattack that was much vaunted. We haven't had any pictures like the pictures we get from Gaza.
Well, we know there's been banning on the front line of journalism. And there's something like the Ukraine, there was like the red line wasn't there for journalists and they couldn't pass a certain area and so no filming was allowed. So
why? Why would NATO be enforcing that? Presumably because in the European Union, journalists are being persecuted.
Yeah. It's a strange one, I accept. But what are you trying to say, though, that there's no war? It's all just a myth?
Well, it is, because the numbers of dead Ukrainians, the estimates went up to 500,000. But we don't really know enough about this increasingly mysterious war where one minute there are Ukraine flags on the lawns of every house of every believer in their governments in NATO nations. The next minute, the flags disappear. The next minute, the money's not being mandated by parties. So much military equipment has been destroyed by the Russians in Ukraine. They're just not interested. I noticed Poland, which has been really opposing the NATO war on Russia through Ukraine, Poland, there's a confidence motion in the government there, and they want Donald Tusk, who is a NATO puppet, to lead Poland amidst the confidence motion. So all these things are going on in Western Europe. I suppose the world at large is not as interested because Western Europe is declining in its power and it's the end of...
No, because a lot of the mainstream media in Western nations, so that's why they've been so invested in the Ukraine war, because it was on their soil, if you like, or nearer to them than the Middle Eastern wars. So it's interesting that it's really gone into the background in the last few weeks, but it seems like this week there's a renewed campaign for support in Ukraine, which brings us on to Tuesday, and Zelensky is going to be visiting US President...
Wait, you missed something there. You've gone to Tuesday already?
Yeah.
Russia's Lavrov is speaking, 2:45 p.m. local time at the Qatar Doha Forum. I know there'll be a lot about Gaza and the EU-backed genocide in Gaza, but having said that, I'm sure he's going to say a bit, won't he? And you know who else is there? Mm-hmm. Hussein Amir Abdullahi and the Iranian foreign minister in Qatar at the Doha Forum.
Wow.
All these countries opposed to Washington hegemony, to European Union puppetry and British puppetry, all speaking.
I don't
even know why you've passed through Monday so quickly, because Jack Taxera, the whistleblower who released to the world how British special forces were dying in Ukraine for the Washington war on Russia, apparently there's going to be some hearing in his case. And it's the 59th anniversary of Che Guevara speaking at the United Nations General Assembly before he was assassinated by
it. That one.
Oh, really? Okay. And you're forgetting about the Trump... not the Trump, the Biden crime family case, pre-trial motion in Delaware.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's ongoing.
Tuesday's packed.
Last week.
Monday's packed.
There's a lot going on Monday. But yeah, keeping in with the Ukraine theme, which, as we'll see, will be a theme throughout the week. Zelensky will be visiting Joe Biden in the White House. It's only his second trip, actually, since 2022, since the Russian invasion. But I believe he's going there to try win over the Americans in approving a $60 billion defense aid package, which Biden is trying to get through. And according to the Kiev Institute for the World Economy, the figures are a bit skewed, but the US has apparently sent $75 billion in aid to Ukraine since 2022. Though Congress has approved
Sorry, that's all the cheering contractors like BlackRock getting that cash because it's recycled out of Ukraine, a lot of it, isn't it?
Sure. Well, yeah, there are stories about where the money is coming from and how it's getting to them. But Congress has approved $113 billion. So there's a lot of figures bandied about, but it, basically a lot of money has been going from the US into Ukraine. But obviously, the problem with this aid package is, as we know, the Republicans have been pushing back, and they actually want to spend money on other wars, like the US-Mexico border war, where 8,000 migrants have died since 1998. So the budget will be contributing to more deaths, regardless of where the money goes.
Arguably. But then why do you think it is that, I mean, it's not like the representatives in the House or senators in the Senate suddenly realizing that maybe pouring money into supporting genocide in Gaza and pouring money into a hopeless war with the largest country on earth is a stupid thing to do and is going to be counterproductive in terms of it creating the threat of terror in the United States and also losing Western Europe as an economic power. I mean, why are they suddenly worrying about this? I suppose you're right. They worry about the border and the legacy issues of U.S. imperialism south of the Rio Grande and people desperate to come in over that southern border. Biden administration, of course, caught for putting children in cages, desperate people escaping the US's proxy wars in Latin America or their legacy, Central America too.
Well, I'd say, as we've seen, the US budget in one way or another arguably is always contributing to deaths in some part of the world in one way or another. I'm sure you may agree or may not agree.
Whilst they, of course, say, no, they're saving them. Don't see how they said that. I'm sure you'll be following Xi Jinping's visit to Vietnam. Yes. Vietnam, even though it defeated the United States, it kind of is becoming closer and closer to U.S. neoliberal policy. But maybe post-Ukraine, post-Gaza genocide, Vietnam, too, is realizing, look, the future is not Washington's. So, what do you think of President Vo Van Thang in Vietnam?
The visit is an interesting one. I say that's also happening on Tuesday, to those listening, to be clear. And it's the first time, I believe, Xi Jinping's visited Vietnam in 6 years. And what the analysts are saying on this, it's really competition with the US here, because Biden visited Vietnam in September, was the last time he went, I believe, to seek out support against China, which is growing its influence in the region, which, of course, the US can't handle. And actually, the deputy director of the Asia program at the International Crisis Group, Huang Leitu, said, from China's perspective, the visit is to emphasize that it's not lost Vietnam to the rival camp. So it's very much a competition, I think, with the US is the reason behind this visit. And as we know, there are growing tensions between US and China, as has been growing for the last few years. So I think that's what this visit is about.
International Crisis Group, one should say, played a pivotal role in the propaganda effort to support Al-Qaeda and ISIS in Syria. And the International Crisis Group very much involved in the pro-Zelensky, pro-Nazi propaganda campaign in Western Europe. It should be said that, you know, our clothes are probably made in Vietnam. Vietnam produces textiles and so much in the global south for those Western markets. But again, this multipolarity tilting thing so that they presumably their goods are needed in China and Europe. Not a great as a greater market. You know what's happening on Tuesday that I bet you're ignoring again? You love ignoring it. The Billy and O'Gale community is back in the London High Court.
Oh, what? That's amazing.
Shell Oil. I don't know whether you have shares in the Anglo-Dutch Shell Oil Company.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? What is that?
Yeah, well, you know, I thought you knew all about that. It's 60 years since, clearly there's a battle between Shell and these impoverished people in Nigeria, which should be such a rich country, but is arguably just another US puppet state, which, you know, we're waiting for that one to change, given all the changes in Africa in 2023. 60 years since Kenyan independence, famously the Mau Mau genocide by the British. They killed all the African great leaders. So when the country became independent, they had Jomo Kenyatta as the first leader of an independent Kenya, but he was already highly, highly compromised by American intelligence agencies. And you see the Kenya today as a British base, and Kenya so far, up until the past few months, has usually played the puppet role of the imperialists very well. Maybe that'll change in 2024, but 60 years since that. And
well, that's interesting, because what I thought, Afshin, you would mention for Tuesday is the European Parliament debate on Gaza, with Joseph Borrell, of course, the EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs, who has, of course, said recently the destruction of Gaza is comparable, if not higher, to Germany in World War II, and has warned Israel to not be consumed by rage in continuing its war.
Warned. While the genocide is happening, he's warning the perpetrator that he is arming and then trying to attack Israeli policy in this mild way. Joseph Borrell, the European Union countries are facilitators of genocide. And even those countries critical of genocide in Gaza, like Ireland and Spain, they're part of the facilitation, aren't they? They're not leaving the European Union because of what we're seeing, the largest number of children slaughtered to death in modern history in conflict. Mm-hmm. It's Western Europe has lost any ability to speak about human rights, I think. I noticed that in... you know what would be great, Millie, if you did this? The Senate is going to hold a secret meeting on Iran. So I don't know how the Democratic representatives of the United States get to hold secret deliberations on Iran. What's Biden going to do? Bomb Iran amidst all the things that are going on?
Why would it be great if I did this?
If you could get in there somehow. I don't know. I noticed the House is debating Russia, Iran, and Venezuela. And Syria is under discussion at the UN Security Council. And what? In the past 48 hours, they bombed the ancient city of Damascus, the European Union, Britain, and the United States armed aerial strikes on Damascus. Mm-hmm. Appalling.
Yeah, well, as I say, the US budget always going towards some deaths in some way or another, arguably, of course. Wednesday, then, are you done? You done for Tuesday?
Unless you had something. There is.
Yeah, but you know, no. We can talk about that one.
Yeah, okay. Wednesday.
Wednesday. Well, you mentioned the EU, and now the European Court of Human Rights on Wednesday is holding a hearing on the Ukrainian case against Russia over its taking of Crimea in 2014. Now, the Ukraine, and I think this is an interesting one. I'm not sure actually when Ukraine put its application into this case, but it's interesting that it's happening now several years after it happened. But I'll tell you what Ukraine says. Ukraine says Russia is responsible for the deaths of Ukrainian military servicemen, law enforcement officers, civilians, and the apparent torture and ill treatment and the arbitrary deprivation of the liberty of civilians and servicemen.
And the Tatar community, I understand,
and they've also
is in this case. I mean, this is just so absurd, given that even polling from NATO countries shows the masses of numbers of people in Crimea want to be part of Russia and nothing to do with the blood-soaked reputation of Western Europe. This is absurd. And the European Court, what is it? European Court of Human Rights. How can you have a court of human rights in a continent that is arming genocide in the Middle East? I think arguably the best thing for human rights, some people in the global south, and probably a lot of them believe, is the annihilation of this court, everyone to do with the European Court of Human Rights. Something must be done to destroy everything that is a part of the European Court of Human Rights to further human rights.
Well, do you think, now you mentioned about Ukrainians living in Crimea want to be part of Russia, but what Ukraine is saying and is bringing to the Court of Human Rights case...
They're not Ukrainians in Crimea, are they?
Is that you, well, they're saying Ukrainian nationals living in Crimea were forced to become Russian citizens, and if they refused Russian citizenship, they were deprived of rights, human rights.
But why should we believe anything from a court that is part of a genocidal system?
Sure.
In the Middle East. I mean, they've lost any ability to make accusations, to hear allegations, to hear court crimes. I don't even know what I'd do if I was in Western Europe and I was being charged with something, how would I even recognize the court? These are countries that are complicit in genocide, the worst crimes possible. So how can law and order even exist as it did before Israel committed these atrocities? They've lost all ability to govern, to administer law and order, justice. They've given complete freedom to terrorists, arguably, who oppose Europe, and those who support human rights, to say, we don't recognize your governments, your courts, your laws, because genocide is, that's the be-all and end-all. At Nuremberg, that was what was decided.
The court's role is more about the judging of human rights, though. So whatever the EU may...
Yeah, they have no right to, because it's mandated by the European Union, isn't it? European Court of Human Rights.
I mean, and the what I will say about this is you are right that it seems there is some bias, arguably, by the European Court of Human Rights, because it's taking this case by Ukraine. But interestingly, Russia brought a case against Ukraine in 2021, and the European Court of Human Rights rejected that case, or they've chosen not to take that any further, because obviously countries, you apply a case to the European Court of Human Rights and they get through the list and they decide what cases they're going to take and what they're not. And I think...
Was that case the burning of the trade union headquarters in Odessa, where
I'm not
the
sure
British, the European Union and American-backed Victoria Nuland troops, they killed all those trade unionists, yeah. I think
what's worth in a court of human rights like this is if you're going to hear or you're going to investigate what Russia has supposedly done against Ukraine, then you've also got to hear it from you've also got to hear what Russia has to say that Ukraine has done, right? The court is about, it's not a, there shouldn't be any political agenda to it. They should be seriously investigating each, if we're talking about wars, both sides. And if there are war crimes or things that are going on that break an international law, those people should be accountable for those things, surely.
So, yeah, but I think the symbol of justice that we're used to, say, in the High Court in London, of justice in as a woman blindfolded because you have to be impartial and not be swayed, the one in the European Court of Human Rights has one eye open on some sort of CIA dossier and a red-hot Abu Ghraib U.S. torture camp poker. I think that's... I think it works differently. But I would say House Committee is going to subpoena the heroin and sex worker linked Hunter Biden, part of the so-called Biden crime family. The famous Biden, of course, Joe Biden backing genocide in Gaza. Hunter Biden interests it neo-Nazis in Ukraine. And there's some sort of subpoena, finally, for Hunter Biden.
Yeah, well, that's what we discussed last week. Joe Biden's brother, James Biden, who was subpoenaed, and we knew that that Hunter Biden was due for his deposition as well. So, as you say, got his own charges and alleged crimes that he's facing. So, yes, and that's going on Wednesday as well.
I don't know how much heroin there will be available to test the allegations against Hunter Biden. We know that the mysterious cocaine in the White House disappeared. We still don't know about that. And we don't really know about whether Biden will be obviously impeached before his 2024 run for the presidency.
As we said, though, impeaching is just now the status quo for any US president. So hardly even matters anymore, does it?
Yeah. And also UNHCR in Geneva, Global Refugee Forum on Wednesday begins. I know it's through the week. Nothing there really about the fact that what creates the refugees of the NATO wars, nothing about Britain's, let alone Britain's, maybe there will be about Britain's bizarre plan to send refugees, potential refugees to a country which is known for, synonymous with genocide, Rwanda. I don't really know where
it's interesting you mentioned the Global Refugee Forum, which is going to, holds a forum every 4 years, though it's only had one before the first one was in 2019. The UK is set to be there and will be talking about Rwanda, I believe. But just a few sort of interesting points on this is, as of this year, the UN Court of Human Rights has estimated that by the middle of 2023, there is now, for the first time in recorded history, 110 million people who have been forcibly displaced and over 36.4 million refugees as a result of persecution, conflict, violence, or human rights violations. That's how many refugees there are in the world. That's why this is a very important forum. And also I'll say 50% of all refugees in the world were displaced from just three countries by the end of 2022, and that is Syria, Afghanistan, and Ukraine. And that was
so Syria was where NATO backed Al-Qaeda and ISIS-Daesh to try and destroy the Assad government. Ukraine is where the rubbish Minsk agreements were leading the Russians into a trap, as we know from Merkel, and they had no intention of stopping the mass slaughter and arguable genocide of Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine. And Afghanistan, of course, where the United States spent trillions of dollars, lost, killing so many people to take the Taliban out, and 20 years later, leave the Taliban there.
So what you're saying is there's a common denominator here.
Yes.
All of these refugees.
Yeah, but the common denominator is also the puppets of the United States, without which arguably the United States couldn't have done it, done that. But I should also say, if you've got money, the Fed is perhaps going to drop interest rates, which means that stocks are going to surge. Bitcoin might go down a little. And so with that and all the budgetary stuff of money being recycled through Ukraine back into weapons companies, creating the refugees, obviously, but making money on the stocks for the arms companies, and all that money going to Israel, which also comes back to arms companies for each missile or cluster bomb dropped on a child's school, injuring, slaughtering, maiming children. That's more money again in dividends. So that's one thing to bear in mind. And it's 20 years on Wednesday since the U.S. puppet. He was there because of the United States. Saddam Hussein was caught in Tikrit before being hanged very swiftly so that he didn't appear on camera in any court proceeding to explain how the CIA backed Saddam Hussein to kill so many in Iraq before he himself would, of course, be killed in Iraq in an illegal invasion.
They're not proven in a court of law, that, though, right?
No, they just hanged him, didn't they? Before he was in... Or was it just a judge in Iraq said no, who was obviously financed in the pay of the United States, who just said you're guilty and didn't allow him to say anything about how Britain and the United States had been backing him for so many years. And your Mrs. Thatcher, of course, your hero, a great fan of Saddam Hussein, I remember in the 1980s. Late 1980s.
That's right. Well, you mentioned the Fed on Thursday then, if you're ready to move on to Thursday.
Sure.
The World Trade Organization, or the WTO, as we call it, will be holding a general council meeting also in Geneva, which is holding the...
Maybe explain what it is. Oh, that was the wrong sound. Explain what WTO is. People don't really know about it because they just get paid to work there now, and I don't know what they do.
How do you explain it? I mean, it's obviously a highly criticized organization by some. You say it's a way for countries to engage in wars and trade on undeveloped nations.
It was supposed to grease the wheels of capitalism, ease trade between different businesses. It was supposed to be a great thing for capitalism.
A lot of people deem it unnecessary now when it comes to international trade and a kind of expensive and sort of pointless organization now. So I think there's a lot of questions around it. Well, what do you make of the WTO?
It was corrupted from the outset in Seattle, which saw the first anti-globalization riots at the end of the last century. And it was supposed to, allow free trade. No, it didn't. It was to diminish and stop global South countries from fairly competing with NATO countries. So it was usurped. And in recent years, China, Russia, other countries thought, we can still reform it. It could be something for the future. But of course, Western Europe, European Union, Britain, the United States, they sanction everywhere. One minute this business is okay. One minute business there is not okay. You can trade pencils from Iran. No, you can't. The graphite could be used for nuclear weapons. Basically, the European Union, how ironic, it was the European Union, Britain, and the United States that have sabotaged the WTO so that it couldn't work to improve entrepreneurs' lives around the world at all by sanctioning here and there and stopping money flow and stopping SWIFT payments. And, you know, someone might say that given the self-sanctioning over Ukraine, prospect of war with Iran and Russia and China, they've destroyed any idea that the WTO could help guarantee some neoliberal, beautiful future where the rising tide lifts all boats and an entrepreneur or anywhere in the world could trade their goods and sell their services to people in Oklahoma and Siberia.
Corporations end up being exploited in some way and used for gain in some way or other, rather than being used for what they're initially set out to do. And we can say that for a lot of organizations, which...
But why don't they resign, Millie? I mean, the people who work in the WTO, what is the name of the Secretary General or Managing Director of it? I don't even know. We don't really hear about WTO so much because those guys are taking the salaries and not saying anything publicly about the fact that Washington has, and the Brussels and London have violated all terms and treaties as part of the WTO commitments that they had made, saying, no, all trade should be free. No, the NATO countries are not doing that.
Works, Afshin. From everything we've talked about today, we know how it works. People don't speak out, and things very much go under the radar.
Some do. That guy Josh from the State Department's been speaking about U.S. support for genocide. He resigned. There's some good guys.
Some do. And they end up like Julian Assange, right?
That's what some say.
But I thought, Afshin, you might be mentioning that on Thursday it would be 209 years to the day, according to historical records, since the French invasion of Russia, led by Napoleon, of course, ended in defeat by the Russians, and an estimated half a million French died.
Isn't there some new Ridley Scott film about Napoleon everyone's talking about? Mm-hmm. All I know really about that is that one of the greatest painters in history, Francisco Goya, had great hopes for Napoleon, thought Napoleon was genuinely going to reform things and was horribly disappointed. I think that's what happens when you go for individuals in this way. But we still have metric systems and lots of legacy things from Napoleon. I thought rather than Napoleon, you'd be talking about the Biden crime family, as I said, the impeachment of Biden, the vote in the House on Wednesday. What is that? That doesn't actually mean that Biden can be impeached. Does that mean that the inquiry goes further?
I think it would go to its next stage, or we would have heard more about him being impeached, wouldn't we? Which, of course, we've...
Or do they get to assassinate him like JFK, US authorities?
Allegedly. But we've not really heard a great deal about this inquiry. Not quite like we heard about Trump's, which was a headline news when he was...
Or Bill Clinton, of course.
Also, so perhaps there's something to be said about that.
It's 28 years, though. 28 years.
28 years since when?
28 years since the Dayton Agreement, which destroyed the last socialist state in Europe, Yugoslavia, that had a fully functioning healthcare system, housing system, all the things that big corporations hate, so they could rip them up and make profits out of all these different bits. And NATO aerially bombarded Yugoslavia, broke it up, tens of thousands, maybe more, hundreds of thousands killed in the center of Europe, again, showing how NATO never guaranteed any peace since 1945, because even after that, they were going, no, NATO guaranteed the peace. There was no peace in Europe that NATO guaranteed. And now, of course, they're privatizing all those bits, and Serbia in a precarious state because it doesn't like everything that Brussels does.
Serbia, which has its parliamentary elections coming up on Saturday, I believe.
That's true.
So this is Thursday, this anniversary of the date.
Someone has to be wary again about US destabilization in the Balkans. And, of course, it is in the Balkans from where World War I was started. So it's always a cauldron that can affect things all around the world.
That's right. Well, Friday then, is 10 years since the start of the civil war in South Sudan. I don't know how much
oil rich, energy rich, split off by George Clooney from Sudan. So Sudan was no longer the largest country in the world, but the propaganda efforts of Nespresso's George Clooney and that Sudan it was a sort of cover job, wasn't it, cut out from the CIA to destroy Sudan's ability to be a powerhouse in Africa?
Well, obviously, I mean, that officially ended in 2020, but what's come about off the back of this is there's now 15 million people, which is about 31% of the population, who are at acutely food insecure, and around 2.3 million internally displaced as a result of this. So I'm sure that's going to be brought up at the Global Refugee Forum. And I believe there's also a UN Security Council on South Sudan earlier in the week as well. So I'm sure that will be mentioned. So,
and this was all catalyzed by the lies about genocide in Darfur 10 years ago or so, which was an attempt to overthrow Omar al-Bashir, who is still in Khartoum, although he's wanted on the International Criminal Court warrant. Who isn't? Putin was wanted, and he was here in Abu Dhabi the other day. I didn't see anyone trying to arrest him. Obviously, the International Criminal Court is now a joke all around the world for its refusal to investigate the genocide that is going on while we speak in Gaza. And Omar al-Bashir is wanted theoretically by them. And it was his overthrowing by CIA-backed forces, by the George Clooney's of this world, those big US aid projects, the propaganda wars in NATO countries that catalyzed this mass starvation, as you said, the terrible conditions that people are living in South Sudan, where all the oil is and where theoretically should be really rich.
Mm-hmm. That seems just to be a result of these wars. You've got millions displaced, millions who can't be fed, and it just goes on for years, if not decades.
By design, but by design, because the United States does not want powerhouses in Africa, which is sitting on all this energy, from competing culturally, militarily, in any other way. It's always been the way. But of course, since Russia's victories in Ukraine, since the dismay by the Global South about British, American, European Union funding for genocide and backing for genocide in Gaza, maybe all things are up for debate again. And Thursday is 42 years. I know we're on to Friday. 42 years since Israel codified illegal occupation of Syria's Golan Heights, which has water and energy and all these things. What's that?
After the Six-Day War, or as part of the Six-Day War?
I think it was a codification, not the actual end of the Six-Day War, wasn't it? Later,
it was. I think it was after the Six-Day War that happened. Which, of course, Israel says they have kept it because of the buffer zone, that to protect themselves, they need the Golan Heights to stop as a buffer zone for the enemies to come into Israel.
But I mean, do they not realize that people fire missiles now? They don't use ground troops. Oh, Israel do in Gaza and get killed by Hamas, arguably. We were on Friday. EU leaders are concluding their leaders' summit. I noticed you didn't really bother with that this week. You're not that bothered?
That one just seemed a bit dull.
EU council leaders?
Who cares about EU?
What's the UN in Geneva going to say about genocide in Gaza? More rhetoric, they talk, and these companies still sell the weapons to murder the children.
Interestingly, talking about children and talking about refugees, actually also on Friday, I don't know what you'll think of this, Afshin. The Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe is holding a hearing on the situation of Ukrainian children. And I quote, they have said, children who have been deported or forcibly transferred to the Russian Federation.
They were evacuated for their own safety, is what Russia says. They were evacuated for their own safety, so they weren't bombed by errant NATO bombs, let alone the Russian offensive.
If that's the case, it's a problem that more than 1.8 million children have had to move to neighbouring countries and are currently refugees, according to UNICEF. And, you know, we talk about children in Gaza who have been killed, and the horrific number of being killed in Gaza and also displaced. But isn't it equally distressing to see?
It's not equally, because they're in Gaza. They are displaced within Gaza under the siege conditions of a concentration camp like Auschwitz or something. So that's 2 million, and half of them are children. So that's 1 million children in Gaza, the biggest number of mass murder of children in modern history, and 1 million children internally displaced who are now being cut down one by one from the ages of zero, as you see on the identity cards of those being buried, and the numbers of two-year-olds with amputated hands and legs and feet. Compare that with Ukraine. Russia evacuated children. This was used by NATO propaganda media like the BBC to say, no, they were taking them as hostages to destroy their brains and love Vladimir Putin. They evacuated those, and the rest of them were able to flee. And of course, they were given masses of aid and resettlement plans, in a stark contrast to those from NATO wars in Afghanistan, Libya, and Iraq.
So of course, we don't know the information on how well they're being treated. We don't know exactly, because some have been occupied by the Russian Federation. Some have gone to neighboring countries like Belarus. But of course, we don't have that much information on exactly what's going on, because as you said, there's not really been much on the ground reporting in this region. So it's hard to give a real accurate measure of what's going on in comparison to Gaza, where we've seen a lot of footage. Saturday is 9 years to the day since the US and Cuba reestablished diplomatic relations, which have been more than 50 years since the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. But of course, as we know, it doesn't really mean much when heavy sanctions remain in place for Cuba. And of course, the US still has an embargo on Cuba, which stops US businesses or businesses owned by US citizens from trading with Cuba or Cuban interests. And it remains the longest standing embargo in modern history. I mean, Is it warranted?
Obviously, the United States has been trying to overthrow the government of Cuba for years, since the revolution of 59. And it was Trump that destroyed that agreement you're referring to, the anniversary of which is on the weekend. Mm-hmm. Trump said no, because, of course, politicians rely on the swing voters from Cuban mafia, children of Cuban mafia from those 60 days, who have a disproportionate electoral advantage in the key swing state of Florida to win elections, which is how democracy works in the United States. So it was very courageous of Barack Obama to go ahead with an agreement with some kind of detente with Cuba. But Trump immediately said no, and Biden hasn't done anything either. And Cuba, of course, went through terrible times with the fall of the Soviet Union, but has been prospering more. It sent medical units all around the world during COVID to developing world countries, of course, develop their own medicines. They have medicines for cancer, I understand, that are not allowed to be sold because of this embargo. But hopefully the multipolar world will benefit Cuba, which has always been the light on the hill, as it were, for countries all around the world in defying US hegemonic power. It refused to do what Washington said. In Havana, people live longer than they do in suburbs of Washington, D.C. They have higher literacy rates than people in the inner cities of the United States, and they always refused to kowtow to Washington demands. London, they do whatever the United States does. Paris, Berlin, Brussels, South Korea, Seoul, Tokyo, but not Havana.
Well, with Cuba, it's very much words without actions, I guess you could say. Diplomacy on a public front, but without really taking much action to show that they're committed to having true diplomacy with Cuba. Have you been to Cuba, Afshin?
Of course. I lived there in the worst time. Yeah. And I did get to visit just after this rule had happened, and things were much better. But of course, you know, there are people still suffering in Cuba because of the embargo, and I suppose it's a testament to how terrible Caribbean nations, now changing, have been about defying the United States over this policy. Only two countries in the world, I think, are supporting this U.S. embargo on Cuba. I mean, even European Union countries support Cuba. What are the two countries? The United States and Israel, committing the Gaza genocide right now. I noticed it's also 13 years on Sunday since Mouad Bouazizi, the fruit seller in Tunisia, set himself on fire against the U.S. puppets of the Arab world. And we saw the Arab Spring. Now that was usurped, and then things went badly wrong on that. But a sign that, you know, a spark, a martyrdom, self-sacrifice can change things very quickly in any part of the world.
Absolutely. Moving to Sunday very quickly, I see there.
I know. That was quick Sunday.
Well, also on Sunday, just a couple left. As we mentioned earlier, Serbia is holding a snap parliamentary election on Sunday to elect members of the National Assembly. And it wasn't meant to take place until 2026, but they were called in October by President Aleksandar Vučić because there were protests sparked by two mass shootings in May, I believe, which killed, I think, 17 people, and that sparked a new election. The last one was called in 2020, and Vucic's SNS coalition lost its majority in the National Assembly. So kind of a bit of a political issues going on in Serbia. Of course, Serbia, friend of Russia.
Friend of the United States. It tries to hold a kind of swing area there, trying to be friends with everyone. Whilst, and maybe that was the United States trying to swing these parliamentary elections, because they were nicer than normal about the suspected CIA catalyzing of violence in this area of Serbia called Kosovo, only recognized by NATO countries. They call it, NATO countries believe there's a country called Kosovo, and which is not recognized by the UN or, you know, any normal country. It's there so that there can be a puppet state there to fight Russia, presumably. So interesting how that parliamentary election will swing. Hopefully it won't be manipulated by Washington and the EU.
You think it will be?
Well, I mean, clearly the European Union tries and manipulates elections so they're not democratic all around the world, just like the United States does. But let's hope the powers of China and Russia and the forces for democracy will ensure that there is a fair outcome and the people of Serbia get to elect who they want to. I'm sure we missed something really crucial this week. That's all I can say.
I don't think so. I think we've got through a lot. So if we've missed anything, I'm sure someone will tell us. So the final thing I've got actually for Sunday.
Golden Globes. You never like American television, do you? You didn't like the award ceremony last week. The Golden Globes are up for Succession, the TV series that showed American corruption at its best.
You've been watching Succession, haven't you, Afshin? You enjoy Succession?
Well, you've been watching. I thought you'd been watching it. Brian Cox, we know him. One of the stars of Succession.
Yeah. I've not quite got around to watching all of that yet.
You're just too busy. Too busy, clearly.
There's so many shows to watch.
But this is the end of the year, isn't it? This is the... That was the wrong one. No. This is the end of the year show. And we just have to say, it's not been a happy year, is it? It's been one of the worst years on record.
Yeah.
It's been absolutely terrible. Unless you're an oligarch, unless you're part of the ruling elites in NATO countries benefiting from the genocides.
It feels like it's been getting steadily worse over the last 3 years. Of course, we had COVID in 2020. That was bad.
Yeah.
Of the world, and seems to have, and then we've had the war in Ukraine and now Israel, and just various things just seem to be looking very.
I think a lot of the world will be hoping that the Ukraine crisis resolves itself with some kind of peace agreement and Russia recapturing Odessa like it should always have had Odessa, and that somehow amidst all the slaughter of all these 10,000, 14,000, I don't know how many, and so many children, the Palestine question will come to emerge in a new way. And maybe Israel will lose its status, well, by any historical measures, lose its status as a country after what it's done in recent weeks.
Yeah, well, there's room for hope. And I'll just finally say that on Sunday, Pope Francis, who we've mentioned in recent weeks, who was meant to be going to COP and then couldn't because he was ill, I believe. He's going to be turning 87 on Sunday, and he has recently been criticized by pro-Israeli groups for his comments on the war in Gaza, for saying, I quote, "Here we have gone beyond wars. This is not war. This is terrorism." So implying there that Israel is acting as the terrorists. But we wish him a happy birthday.
That's very, very Christmassy. But he won't mention, will he, the 54th anniversary of the Piazza Fontana bombing in Milan as part of the, people think, to do with the CIA-backed destruction of the communist parties in Italy, but then other people think it's to do with Freemasons. Other people think connected to the Vatican. Who knows? But the biblical Holy Land this Christmas is just not in a good way. British, American, EU-backed aerial bombardment of Damascus, where, of course, who was it on the road to Damascus that converted to Christianity? In St. Paul. And we have all these ideas of the ideas of Christianity's birth under attack by NATO countries. And of course, we saw in Bethlehem, they're not going to celebrate it normally. And there's that picture you can see online of the priest in Bethlehem who has Jesus born amongst the rubble. So a terrible time. But I don't think in NATO countries they'll recognize amidst the Coca-Cola colors, Santa Clauses and Christmas trees that it is NATO and NATO countries that are destroying the spirit of Christmas and the spirit of Jesus.
So you're saying the true meaning of Christmas this year won't quite come into fruition?
Well, so. if you live in London, Paris, Berlin, Washington, Brussels, you're basically, they'd have killed Jesus, wouldn't they, before he could tell his story.
So Merry Christmas, everyone, is what you're trying to say, right?
Well, it's all about a Palestinian... It's all about a Palestinian guy, Christianity, isn't it? Jesus was a Palestinian.
Well, we better leave it there. And that is our last show until January. So thank you so much for everyone who's been watching, who supported us on our new little venture here.
I thought that was going to be a carol or something, but I got a wrong sound for that.
Not quite the way to see us out for the year. Of course, we wish everyone a Merry Christmas as much as you can get a Merry Christmas as we have just discussed. And of course, if you go by the Gregorian calendar, also Happy New Year.
Yeah, that's true. And let's hope next year is better. We'll be back in the new year, won't we?
We will.
Hopefully.
Hopefully to give you some better news than what we've been able to give you the last few weeks. But we'll see you then.
Bye for now.